Welcome to the Retzel Health Law Hotspot. Health Law Hotspot is a podcast for physicians and health professionals that covers the legal issues and trends that affect the healthcare industry.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Health Law Hotspot. I'm Erica Adler, shareholder and health law group practice leader at Retzel & Andrus. Today, we're going to talk about healthcare lending. And I have two really great guests with me. The first is Mohammed Abunada, and the second is Mark Oganovich. Did I say it right?
You did.
Good. Both of them are senior vice presidents of professional service business banking with First Midwest Bank. And for over 20 years, they've been working with dentists, doctors, veterinarians, and other healthcare professionals across the Midwest in terms of their lending needs. I personally have worked with both of them because, as you all know, we work with physician, dental, and other practices. And one of the biggest needs that our clients have are a lending partner. And this can become important if they want to acquire equipment, they want to buy another practice location, maybe a building, or they have other types of financial distress sometimes within their practice. So I'm really excited to be covering this topic, and I want to welcome both of you today.
Thank you, Erica.
Thank you, Erica.
Well, I'm so excited to have you here, and I want to kind of jump right into some questions that I have. And I guess one of the first ones is, what is something that our clients should realize that they should be calling First Midwest and you guys in particular about within their practice setting? What are some of the things that they may not realize that they should be contacting you for?
I mean, it's very important to note that Mark and I have been with the same organization for 20 plus years, and we specialize in healthcare lending. So we have a designated group under First Midwest Bank, healthcare banking, where we have a specific healthcare policy that addresses everything you just alluded to, where if somebody wants to buy an existing office, practice acquisition, if they want a new construction practice remodel, the list goes on and on. Startup financing, refinancing their existing debt. We have a wide array of products specifically to doctors.
Okay, so obviously they really can come to you for anything a practice might need, or if you couldn't help, I assume you would direct them somewhere else. But what are some of the mistakes that you see them making where maybe they get to you a little bit too late and you wish they had known, other than not coming to you sooner? You know, what are some mistakes that you see practices making?
So maybe not practices, but the doctors looking for the money, right? And I'm going to blend our banking 101 with maybe a little 102 lesson here, right? When you think about loans, what are the loans you think about? Like your friends get a mortgage loan, a car loan, maybe student loans. These are all consumer loans that every bank does. Bank, financial institutions, life insurance companies, credit unions, right? And they all do that because they have what's called tangible collateral. It's something that they can touch and take back from you if you don't make those payments, right? Your house, the foreclose on the house, take it back, sell it. Maybe they lose a little bit of money. Same with the car. And as long as you make enough money, you can go into any one of those institutions and get that loan. But now you have a doctor who wants to, and by the way, to add on what Mo was saying, it's basically for us, like any commercial and really any dental specific or healthcare specific bank, just any commercial loan a doctor can need. That's buy into a practice, buy a practice, start a practice, buy a building, buy equipment, line of credit, all that. You go back to those same banks and usually what the doctor's going in for is now intangible collateral, right? You're buying the goodwill, you're buying charts of a practice, or you're starting an office. You know, banks are scared of taking the drywall back, the floor back. So these are very unique loans that, you know, that same doctor who makes a lot of money can go back in to a bank that's not niche in that bank. And they say, I don't really do it, or they structure it, you know, to not to the side of the client really, right? Asking for an additional guarantor, additional collateral, tying up these assets that those guys don't really want to tie up. So I think the mistake is not really identifying your team before you go out for this loan, right? Like starting up a practice. You should be coming to the bank first, right? And know who the bank is. Are they in this space? Can they lend in this space? Buying a practice, right? Am I going to be able to qualify for this money before I even engage a broker, an accountant to look at it, a real estate guy to negotiate the lease and that for me. It seems like we're the last one in, when a lot of times I feel like we should be the first ones. And that's the mistake I see.
I absolutely agree. Mo, anything you want to add to that? Do you kind of see the same mistake going on, or do you see people borrowing from bad sources that then you're trying to help fix? Or
there are times people go to hard money lenders. but aside of that, as Mark alluded to, we're typically one of the last people in. Unfortunately, we should be one of the first people in that they're dealing with. And why is that? We want to tell them what it takes to qualify for a loan. So if they're coming out of, you know, residency or dental school, you know, where do you have to be? We get these questions a lot. Where should my financial picture look like? So if you are still living with your parents, build up as much cash as possible, right? Don't leverage yourself. Don't take on too much debt that you can't handle, because let's face reality. When you're going to buy a practice or start up an office, there's going to be a lot of overhead, especially in year one. So you want to build up as much as liquidity as possible.
You know, another, I don't know if I want to call this a mistake or a step that's skipped, is projections, right? Like, clients don't love when you're like, hey, send me projections. Mm-hmm. But doc, like, you're about to come borrow $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 to start this practice, $1 million to buy this practice. Like, are you really just saying it's going to be fine? Like, how are clients not sitting down saying, I think I'm going to collect this much? Here's what my expenses are going to be, just so they know. Like, we know in a startup, you're not going to make money in the first year. It's fine. But like, let's roadmap that out, right? How much you're going to lose for how long? Where's that going to come from? When do you expect to start making money? You want to take an office? What are we doing with the staff? Do you do the same procedures? That should get mapped out to say, here's, you know, I'm spending this much because I know I'm going to make this much. Not just, yeah, it's going to be there. It's going to be fine. I mean, that's usually what we're hearing.
Right. You know, one of the things I find, particularly with First Midwest, is that when my clients come to you, where they might have been turned down before, they don't often get turned down. And I think part of that, well, I mean, not saying they never get turned down, but I think part of it is that knowledge a little bit of the industry, that there is that startup period and your familiarity with how well these practices can do and what it is that makes them successful or unsuccessful. Whereas somebody just sitting at a big bank that does construction work is going to be like, yeah, you're a bad bet. Why would I give you money? You know, that idea. So really knowing that industry. So when somebody does come to you, they want to borrow money, you know, other than looking at their projections and stuff, are you looking at things like, you know, where they're located, how have other practices done in that area? What is this person's past history been? Like, if they, you know, shut down a couple of prior practices, and, you know, what kind of stuff are you really looking at? What are your expectations?
I'll take that, Mo. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, every one of those things you just said, right? You can, and like, it's different across medical doctor, dentist, vet, like, you know, I mean, I guess in general, maybe the same, but I'll take dental because I do a lot of dental. If a doctor wants to come in to buy a practice, certainly like on a high level, I have to make sure, is this putting out enough cash flow to support the debt here at the bank? And, you know, still give you enough money to take home and earn a living. You know, we want to see you live while putting some money in there. That's your primary source, is the business. The secondary is that doctor. Is this guy going to, you know, is this doctor going to keep working somewhere else? Are they leaving to come here only? What risk does that pose? Are you buying $1 million practice, but you've only ever produced 300,000? How's that going to work, right? Oh, maybe it's because you're only working 2 days. Now you're going to work 4 days. Right. So, yeah, I mean, you're looking at demographics of those neighborhoods. Is the build out new? How much hygiene is in a practice? What kind of equipment is in there? What's the staff retention look like? I could probably draw a list of 20 things that I'd say, ideally, I'd love to know all these. And you have to watch how many questions you're asking, you know. We want to be creative and we want to land this plane smooth. Right. So I don't want to overwhelm somebody with so many questions, because maybe partially my credit team wants to know, or partially because I'm just an inquisitive person and I'd like to know. The more you ask, the more right? Like info you can dig up. But I mean, every one of those, and even after analyzing the practice, then you're going to this doctor individually and you're saying, okay, what kind of borrower do I have here? If I could paint two pictures for you, I'd say maybe borrower A has left school. They kept driving that same economical car, maybe even live with their parents. We see that a lot. They've saved up a bunch of money. And then you have someone else who went out and bought, you know, high-end car, renting in some high-end neighborhood, spending all the money on vacation. Each one of those borrowers, same thing, right? They paint a different picture of risk. Not saying one guy gets it or one doesn't, but the level of risk will usually determine how, you know, aggressive we want to get with loan structure or loan pricing.
And to add to that, what's very important is credentialing, right? A lot of times, not a lot of times, but occasionally there will be somebody and they weren't on top of their credentialing. And that's going to be a big problem because of cash flow, right? There's a delay in cash flow. That's one of the first things you should tackle. So if they talk to an attorney like yourself, Erica, and they created a new PC for their new entity, let's get going on the credentialing because cash flow is huge.
Going back to your original, you know, about the low default rate, and it is, that all comes back to the character of these doctors, right? Which is really defined mostly by credit report, but by some, you know, looking into their backgrounds as well, looking into their professional backgrounds. There's websites that do that as well.
That's a good point. So one of the things that Mo and I talked about earlier when we were offline here was about COVID. And I guess I'm really kind of curious, how have you seen practices impacted by COVID? Have you seen any of them closing? Have you seen them not able to meet their loan obligation? What are you doing differently, or what are they doing differently, if anything, as a result? And I guess maybe what should people listening to this be aware of?
Well, as we know, there was a 2 to 3 month pause because of the pandemic. So unless it was emergency cases. So people panicked. And that goes back to the basics, right? You have to be ready. You have to have liquidity, either personally or in your business account, right? Well, people came to us and said, guys, we need lines of credits, but we were so inundated with PPP where we were handcuffed for a month or so. So that's very important. Also, providing for financials, you know, there's that 2 month window, 3 month window where there was a pause. When we have 1231 20 financials, there's going to be a dip in collections, right? And then you might see an increase in overhead. Why? PPE, right? The cost, the chain of, you know, purchasing things were very difficult at that time. I'm sure a lot of people heard about that, experienced that. So when you have updated financials, let's say, you know, 531 21 financials, P&Ls, updated P&Ls. And then when you compare that to the same period of last year, that's going to give you a pretty good indicator on where, you know, how they've rebounded since the pandemic.
So are you seeing now, did any practices that you're aware of not survive? Did you guys work with people who couldn't make their loan payments? What did you see from that perspective? Or do you think people weathered it pretty well?
I mean, we worked with a lot of people that couldn't make payments for a few months. I'll never forget those first couple months of working from probably 8 a.m. to midnight for a couple months, because, I mean, really, you know, when you're told you have to close, whether that's dental closing almost altogether, medical to, you know, not like the non-elective stuff, nobody knows what's going to happen tomorrow. So for us, as good as healthcare specific is in the good times, it was equally as tough in the bad, because you look down at your phone and you know, you might have had 50, 100 calls in a day, and you look and you're like, how am I going to reach? These are all great people that I know that I've helped that know I'm usually here. How am I going to reach back out to them? So, yeah, I mean, certainly we deferred a lot of that during COVID. And then, like Mo said, I mean, PVP came around and said, okay, just go ahead and untangle that web you created, because we're going to pay interest for you. But I think that after the month or two, and I mean, in certain industries like the vet industry boomed, right? Because everybody stayed at home and bought a dog. So shelters, pet stores, I mean, everybody ran out of pets, and like, you know, these animal hospitals went bonkers, and they're still doing pretty well. But nobody closed. I think after that month or two, learned how to work through it, you know, probably mostly because that PPP helped, but like when everything reopened in like June-ish, learned how to work through it. I would say that today, most of vets ahead of schedule for sure. Dental, most dental offices are back, at least our clients are back to where they were pre-COVID, except for the Loop. The Loop is still hit pretty hard, you know, with people not working down there, working remote, not going down there to see their old doctor that's down there. But to this minute on our call here, I haven't, I'm not aware of one that's closed strictly due from that COVID pandemic.
And Erica, we've had a longstanding relationship with a lot of these clients, and that's why it's very important to stay in touch with your clients day in and day out. Even on the weekends, we'll hang out, go to sporting events. But honestly, it's, you know, it sounds a little cliche, but we're family. You know, everybody has our cell phone numbers. Everybody's calling us. Everybody's talking to us. We're up to date. You know, we might not have the up-to-date financials, but we have the up-to-date on their status in terms of their practices.
I think that's great. And, you know, it's a little bit different than, that's actually interesting, the relationship you have. I mean, I don't hang out with my clients on the weekend, although, you know, they're welcome to call me anytime if they want. But I guess, you know, one other thing that I find really interesting is that you can usually, you know, my familiarity with you guys is that you're a good resource as well for clients who need vendors for particular pieces of equipment and stuff like that. Like a lot of times they'll call me. I don't really do that. I'll look at the contract if they have questions, help negotiate if there's a dispute, but I'm not really making those connections or letting them know, you know, what I think of a particular financing contract with certain vendors. But I know that's something you do kind of help your clients with. Can you speak to that as well? I think it's really interesting.
Sure. I mean, those relationships are obviously super important. I mean, it helps. And I guess it's probably more for selfish reasons, us just trying to grow our own brand and grow that referral base. But I mean, this is Mo and I as bankers. I mean, you know, the second I get a call and I'm thinking about the team that I have to put around that deal, right? That could be the attorney, accountant, broker, equipment, IT. I mean, every single person who's going to touch that client deal, because I want a smooth landing, right? I mean, it's hard for any one of us to get clients, and like, you know, we'll get a client, we'll get a loan approved, and you know, you think that's it, but there's a long road still to closing. So, I mean, whoever I'm inserting into a deal to help me along the way, the attorney to close it, the CPA to look at the numbers, I want to make sure they're in my industry, they understand what I'm looking at, and we're all working towards that one cause of like getting that client what he wants and, you know, getting him to the finish line. So, yeah, I mean, we pay super close attention to those relationships.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I do the same thing. It's a small community. We all know each other. We all know who knows their stuff, whether it's health or dental or whatever it is. And that is really nice to have that connection. So one last thing I kind of want to talk about, which is we're really bombarded right now with a lot of sales and purchases of practices. Despite COVID, despite rising inflation or whatever else is going on out there, it, at least in my experience right now, it's booming, the number of transactions that are going on right now. Are you seeing that? Are you seeing a lot of requests for people to borrow, to buy practices? Are you seeing a lot of people selling practices? Is this something you think is a trend that we're going to continue seeing? What's your forecast on that?
Yeah, I mean, the volume is insane right now. It definitely is. Acquisitions mostly, you know, and that picked up when you think about, and Mo kind of talked about this earlier with like COVID rolling into this, is you used to ask somebody for a couple of years of their old tax returns and you were able to analyze that cash flow and say that cash flow should be worth this or can pay for that. And then, you know, when patients disappeared, you have no clue how that's going to come back, right? So when do you come back? When do you start lending? And we started getting some calls, I'd say maybe in like August or September, right, to buy, maybe not as much to start, but the, you know, which has picked up tremendously since then. And now I would say is back to significantly more even than pre-COVID levels. And, you know, I think a lot of them want to borrow. Interest rates are awesome, but we'll actually have a decent amount of clients that want to even pay cash for some of these, because I think they're still flush with some of, you know, all of those, you mentioned it earlier, right? every acronym there is, PPP, EIDL, HHS, right? We could keep going down the line where they got all these cash sources thinking that business might not come back. Then it did. And it was like this perfect storm of like, oh, okay, cool. Now I can sit on this cash. What do I do with it? But I mean, we'll still want to talk to them about rates. Rates are too good to not borrow right now. So yeah, the volume is definitely back.
Right. Mo, are you seeing the same thing?
Absolutely. Even, you know, not as much in startups, but there are a ton happening, but more on the practice acquisition side. And even on the construction side, believe it or not, ground up construction, you know, people, there's a lot of that, but you have to have a reliable contractor to help you out. Now, you know, people go in there focusing on the contractor statement, but design build is very important as well. You have to start from phase A, which is the specs and plans, and thinking about the design. So is that contractor specifically helpful and knowledgeable about that segment, as well as putting up the vertical as well? So there's a lot of that happening. I got a few of those bigger projects happening. We hope it continues. As Mark alluded to, rates are still at a pretty much all-time low. So
right. Volume is putting a lot of pressure on pricing too. I feel like the seller pool might not be as big as it's been in the past, but the buyers, you know, I mean, we have clients who are, I don't know, 3-5 years out of school, like in one bucket. Then maybe you have someone who's a little bit longer that wants to grow to 2 or 3 practices. Then you have this maybe 10 to 15 person who wants to grow into a big corp. Then you have the corps, and you have corps from out of market. All of these buyers coming in here are driving up the practice prices. So we've definitely seen an increase in price too.
Right. I mean, it's been exciting, I guess, for all of us who are kind of really involved in doing this. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, after a while, there won't be quite as many practices to buy and sell anymore. And certainly on our end, we're seeing a lot of private equity buyers as well. So, you know, that's something I think will definitely continue. All right, so let's talk about some final thoughts or pieces of advice that you have coming from the perspective of being a lender to physician, dental, and other types of professionals. Is there anything you want to share kind of as your final thought or piece of advice?
So you used the word lender. You know, that's great. We lend, but we're healthcare bankers, right? And we have so many different segments within the bank where we can help our clients. The one thing I would definitely say to some of, you know, our past experiences is people like to dazzle in other things outside their everyday. You know, if you're a doctor, you know, why don't you invest and focus on your practice, maybe expanding it versus buying some non-owner occupied strip center that you barely have any experience with. So, you know, stay in your lane at times. It's okay to diversify. Everybody's looking to diversify. But at the same time, building that right team around you and connecting you with all the right partners, that way things will definitely be much more streamlined in terms of the process from beginning to end is key in my opinion.
Mark?
For me, I'd just say be prepared. You know, when you're going to come to the bank and you're going to ask for a loan, whatever it is, start a practice, buy a practice, you know, don't have gone out and bought that big car a couple of weeks ago, right? Like, you know, run up credit card bills, save as much money as possible. There will never be a dollar amount on an application under cash that we will think is too much, right? You save as much cash as you can and understand what you're getting into, right? Understand what's on your tax returns, maybe, you know, why the accountant did what they did, the practice you're looking at, what are you going to turn it into? Just be ready to have those decisions so we can analyze, you know, the correct picture.
Right. I think that's really great advice. I want to thank you guys so much for being here. And I think two of the main things that I take away from this is that you really bring to the table kind of the specialty in healthcare and dentistry. You don't just work with any type of businesses. This is your expertise. And I think it's really important, just like, you know, you go to a doctor for their particular specialty, you guys have your specialty as well, as do I. And I think that's kind of what makes us really good team members. I think the other thing also, though, is to surround yourself with that good team. So I can't be everything to my client. And, you know, just like you mentioned, you need your good accountant. You may need a good, you know, insurance broker who knows malpractice insurance. Right. A good healthcare lender. So I think having a really good team, all of these things play a role in helping a practice be successful, whether they're operating or they're buying or they're selling or expanding or whatever it is that you're doing. So that is all really great advice. And thank you guys so much for being here. Maybe you'll come back again in the future and we'll talk about some new trends that are going on. Well, thank you for joining us on the Health Law Hotspot. This is Erica Adler from Retzel & Andrus, and you can see all of our other podcasts and find out more at ralaw.com. And thanks again to Mo and Mark for joining us today. We're really glad to have had you here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Erica.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Retzel Health Law Hotspot is made available by the firm and its attorneys for educational purposes and to provide general information, not to provide specific legal advice. Use of the Retzel Health Law Hotspot does not create an attorney-client relationship between you and the firm or any of its attorneys. The Retzel Health Law Hotspot should not be used as a substitute for competent legal advice, and you should contact an attorney in your state about any legal needs or questions you may have.